contain.
I'm really sort of interested in, like, basically the history of oil, because this is a substance that is just historically groundbreaking in ways everything from the military-industrial complex to the Cold War, World War II. You know, there's just this long, incredibly complex history to, I don't know, Murchison and what you call the Texas Nexus. So crazy. So I just wanted to basically turn it over to you, since you're the expert, and I'm just interested in hearing your whole thesis, because I think this is really helpful to a lot of people. So yeah, introduce yourself and everything, and we're good to go.
Oh yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah. Well, my name is Jed, and yeah, I've got I should plug my Substack at the beginning. This is the Spouter, which is after the inn at the beginning of Moby Dick. So yeah, I mean, like you say, the history of oil, I think, is really interesting and really understudied, because it's really transformed everything in a really rapid amount of time, especially if you take a sort of geological time frame, like any sort of time scale that's bigger than an individual human. The you know amount of time that has passed since industrialization is literally just, you know, a blink of an eye, or like, you know, explosion, or like a gunshot. And you know, I did originally approach this stuff because I have been unsatisfied by the way that we talk about and understand climate change. You know, I sort of began with a general unease and frustration with the way, well, let me back. I think I first got interested in climate change because it seemed to me like it was the final contradiction that, you know, Marx talked about would bring down capitalism. It seemed to me that it is a sort of physical barrier, a physical reality that gets at the basis of our capitalist economy. And so that's how I sort of got interested in talking about climate change specifically. And when I got in there, I found nobody saying that, and everybody, you know, the ways in which we discuss climate change have been so, unsatisfactory to most people, and to the point where most people don't want to talk about it for a good reason. And so I, well, it's kind of hard to know where to start, but I, you know,
maybe we could start with, is oil fake or not? And maybe get into the history of fossil fuels and Sinclair using the dinosaur logo, because I'm one of those people who, I mean, you have to admit that phytoplankton, there is biological origin at the basis of oil. But as kind of a defender of Gottlieb Werner and Neptunism, and also Thomas Gold's theory of hydrocarbon within the Earth's mantle, I tend to take a bit of like, I don't know, ham-fisted approach to believing oil's just like straight up fake and it's just, you know, some hydrocarbon compound that's infinitely regenerable. But you're actually really nuanced at this because you think the peak oil thing is a lie, or not a lie per se, but there's much more oil than they're telling us. And I believe that 100% as well. You've brought up a lot of really interesting research to my attention that has made me alter my, I guess you could say, like, crackpot beliefs.
No, I'm happy to sort of talk about that to begin with. You know, it's abiotic oil is compelling to me also because of the Soviet connection. You know, I'm a big tanky and I'm inclined to take what the Soviets said seriously. But I think that, you know, what you're, I think, referring to is, you know, the question of whether it's physically possible for abiotic oil to exist. The Soviets demonstrated that in the conditions that exist in the mantle, it is possible, basically methane molecules to come together and synthesize into heavier hydrocarbons. What you're talking about in that case is basically going up the entropy scale, right? You're talking about turning simple molecules into more complex molecules due to heat and pressure. And to me, it seems like there's only that that can explain like a small trickle of the oil that we have found in the ground. But as you mentioned, you know, the reservoirs that we've found of oil are just so hugely mind-boggling, so much bigger than any scale that a human can comprehend, and importantly, much bigger than they're telling us. Because if you think about a reservoir of oil, first of all, it's huge. And second of all, there's no physical reason why you can't pump all of it out at once and have it all on the market at the same time. And they discovered this in the early days, you know, the I drink your milkshake oil regime, where everybody, you know, was getting the oil out as fast as possible, and it crashed the market because there just wasn't the demand to make up for that. And that has been, I think, the defining dynamic of the oil industry ever since, is an implicit internal acknowledgement that the supply of oil is potentially much, much bigger at any one time than the market could possibly handle. And therefore, there's always the potential that the market can tank and deprive everybody of their profits. And that's historically made the oil industry an incredibly volatile industry, because you'll have long stretches of time when the price of oil is so low that it's impossible for anybody to make money. And then they will create a crisis. And at that crisis moment, they will be able to create an artificial scarcity and jack up the prices. And that's when they get their payouts. And that's really how the oil industry has worked from the beginning.
Isn't that one of the things when they started digging for oil in Western Siberia? That was like one of the things that brought down that helped bring down the Soviet Union, was they had to create all this infrastructure and build out all these towns so that, because I guess the way oil works, and it, forgive me if I'm naive on this, is that we can't just drill it all out at one time from one place. Some of these places are much more difficult to access. And then I've heard the sort of peak oil theory thing of people who are not skeptical of us running out, is that the price, as the scarcity level depletes, the price of it will go up and force us to adopt, you know, novel ways of energy, whether it's, you know, nuclear fusion or stuff like that. And so it's like, I'm always like really fascinated by this.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. No, that's it's really interesting, but it's sort of like I've heard you mention that the cornucopian mindset on your show before, and I think that that's really the mindset that's right to adopt for oil because, as you mentioned, as conventional reservoirs run out, then the price goes up, and that in turn incentivizes new technologies to get carbon out of the earth. And we saw that with fracking. The real heyday of peak oil was right before fracking hit. And as soon as the fracking technology became applied, it became obvious that there's a lot more carbon in these old wells, a lot more oil in these oil and methane in these old wells than we were able to get out using conventional methods. And that dynamic where the price will go up, triggering new extractive technologies, which triggers a new supply, that is not going to end anytime soon because the geologically speaking, the amount of potential carbon in the earth is again, like way, way bigger than we can comprehend or utilize in a human time scale. There's just so fucking much of it. And it really boggles the mind because it's the collective body of all life on Earth over millions and millions and millions of years. If you think back to the first wave of oxygenation when the algae literally transforms the atmosphere from by introducing this very unstable molecule oxygen into it and reset the entire earth. All of that algae, the bodies of that algae that did that original pioneering work in creating a livable earth, like that's all of that is still underground and ready for us to be burned. These are massively larger webs or just materials that we can grasp at once. Sorry, I got a little bit sidetracked, I think there, but
No, that's great. So you mentioned climate change because obviously fracking has a very negative connotation with the environment. And I think I don't know if you're familiar with like Kohei Saito and degrowth communism, which I really oppose, by the way. I think he's like completely insane. Like primitivism is just I mean, I think it's wrong in a lot of ways, to think that we can't further harness development to solve crises because historically that's just fundamentally false. So yeah, this kind of like Armageddon doomerist, Greta Thunberg mindset. And if you want to get into maybe a bit of that, like so how, when we invent new carbon extracting technologies, what is like the sort of, I don't know, balance of like positive and negative when it comes to stuff like that?
I mean, I to be honest, like I'll come out as a little bit of a climate doomer. When you look at what's actually happening in the, in the atmosphere and in the ecological world, it's so unprecedented and so quick that it's hard to ignore the fact that we are headed, I think, for a massive, like, climate-driven depopulation series of events, a series of catastrophes. And you can sort of say, like, oh, it hasn't happened yet, and people have been doomsaying their, through all of human history, it's always been, the apocalypse is right around the corner, and it hasn't happened yet. But that will be true until it does happen at some point. And so if you look at the rate of change from a human perspective year to year, even now we're beginning to feel that it's getting hotter and every disaster season is getting worse and worse year to year just on a human time scale. But if you zoom out slightly to a more geologic time scale, like I said, these changes are proceeding much more quickly than they ever could have ever before in the Earth's history. And so I do think, there is a real reason to for concern. I think that there's a real reason to begin to think about how we can radically decrease our fossil fuel use in the very near term. I don't see that happening in the political and historical situation we are in now. I think whether we like accelerationism or not, it's an accelerationist world that we're living in. But I do think that there. I agree with you that the sort of return, the primitivistic turn, the idea of turning back to a pre-petrological society is impossible, the toothpaste back into the tube metaphor. But I do think that there are real ways that we could begin to ramp down fossil fuel use really quickly, but they all require basically a centralized communist government. You don't have the power over the economy. In the sort of current kleptocracy that you would need.